Welcome to Cross-Border Tax Talks, where we discuss the latest trends in international taxation, from U.S. tax reform to Europe's latest developments. I'm Doug McConey, PwC's U.S. International Tax Services Leader. You can follow me on Twitter at xbordertax. This week, I'm happy to be back in the D.C. studio, where I'm joined by Pascal Bueller. Pascal is a Swiss tax partner currently on secondment in our New York office. Pascal, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Doug. Thank you.
So, a lot of stuff going on around the world, and it's good to see that Switzerland is now finally officially in the corporate tax reform game. I think this was the second vote that we had just a few weeks ago. Is that correct?
Yes, this is correct. There was a first bill, which was also subject to a popular vote in 2017, but that one got then turned down by the Swiss population. But now, luckily, the second round made it through. And so now Switzerland has, you know, offers stability and predictability in a rather crazy international tax world.
Absolutely. So maybe before we dive into some of that predictability and really understanding about what new Swiss tax reform means compared to the old system, I think one of the things that is pretty unusual, at least internationally, is that the population actually votes on corporate reform, right? As a U.S. advisor, right, we just kind of, we vote in our Congress people, they determine those rules. We spend a lot of time on cross-border tax talks talking about the procedure and some of the policy stuff. But, you know, obviously the electorate generally doesn't vote on our corporate taxes. Mm-hmm. And so how does that work just procedurally from a Swiss perspective, that the laws and they get enacted and then they get packaged together? And I understand that I think part of this particular vote was also the Swiss equivalent of the Social Security system on sort of pensions, if you have a public pension. But explain to me a little bit how that works in Switzerland.
Yes. So Switzerland has a very direct democracy. So the people really can vote on everything. So just in very general terms, every 2 to 3 months, I vote on a topic. So now what happened with the Swiss tax reform is, or typically it's the parliament which works on the bill, and the parliament because there are different parties with different interests, try to already find a compromise on the bill they are putting together. And if a party or anybody in Switzerland is not happy with that bill, they can launch a referendum against that bill. And so with the tax bill that was finished in September 2018, left-wing parties and some of the right side of the political landscape launched a referendum against this bill. They just need to collect 50,000 signatures from people who can vote in Switzerland. They achieved that, and therefore that bill came to a public vote, which was then luckily positive on May 19.
And this was the second time this had happened, right? Because there was a referendum in the past where they voted on something similar, but then that failed.
Correct. So the bill that was now accepted is principally two major topics that were out there in Switzerland. One was the tax reform, and one was the financing of this old age and survival insurance. So in 2017, there were two bills, one with the tax reform, one with these old age insurance vote, and both were turned down. So what now happened is that the parliament combined those two topics into one vote. And I think that also led to the success that it passed through the second time.
I see. So let's talk about it. So what was on the ballot? Talk a little bit about what changed from a Swiss corporate tax perspective, and then we can spend a little time comparing it to the old regime.
Yeah, so, I mean, just maybe four elements which are, for me, relevant for this tax bill. So one is the abolishment of tax regimes. We can discuss that in a sec. The second one is that Switzerland is introducing new internationally accepted measures like IP box regime and R&D super deduction. As a side effect of the Swiss tax reform, a lot of cantons will reduce their headline tax rate, so that in a lot of cantons, which are states or similar to the US states, the overall headline tax rate will be somewhere between 12 and 14%. And the last element is that measures that existed, like the participation exemption regime or the unilateral branch exemption, the tax holidays, those do not change.
Okay. And you had mentioned the cantonal changes to put a rate between 12 and 14, 15%. Yes. How does that relate to the overall federal rate? So like the canton, because in the U.S. we think about, you know, we've got our corporate rate at 21, and then each of the states has their own system, but of tax, you know, depending on the state, can vary pretty wildly. But how does that work? What's the relationship between the federal tax and the cantonal tax in Switzerland?
Yeah, so the rate of 12 to 15%, that is the effective tax rate, which is combined everything, federal, cantonal, and communal elements in one rate. Now, the statutory federal rate is 8.5%. And so the difference is somehow in at the cantonal side of it. But it's a rather complex calculation because taxes are tax deductible in Switzerland, which is a concept which is not very known globally. So it's, yeah.
Yeah, I think that any of our state and local tax experts listening to the cross-border tax talks can, from a U.S. perspective, certainly empathize, and we have a lot of similar complexities to actually determine what that combined rate is as we start to think about the states as well as the federal tax.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the important thing is just that you know you get 12 to 15% or 14% in most of the cantons going forward.
Okay, and then I think that could be, you know, considerably higher than what some taxpayers may have been paying before reform. So maybe talk a little bit about the system before reform now, as far as some of the different rulings that were available, and maybe we can talk a little bit about that and how the new system changes that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's one of the key elements of the tax reform was the abolishment of tax regimes. So tax regimes are, for example, a mixed company regime, holding company, principal company, or Swiss finance branch. So there were a few out there. Those will need to be abolished 1/1/2020 at the latest. And this has also the effect that Switzerland is then not anymore on any gray or black list from the EU or the OECD. Now, just to maybe pick one of those regimes, which is the mixed company regime.
Okay.
That regime, so a company in Switzerland could benefit from that regime, to keep it simple, if more or less 80% of its income and 80% of its expenses were foreign related. And so the OECD and the EU said that this is a harmful tax regime because we're ring fencing stuff here in Switzerland and we need to abolish that. But through that mechanism, which reduced the base, you were, depending on the canton the company is resident, at a rate of maybe 9 to 11%.
So I think a common fact pattern might be a company that has, let's say, their European headquarters in Switzerland, somewhere in Switzerland, obviously depending on what location, what canton they might be subject to, but that they would have their European headquarters there. And so that it would not be uncommon in that type of fact pattern for a taxpayer to generate greater than 80% of that income as non-Swiss source income. And so that would be the type of taxpayer that may have been eligible for this type of regime.
Correct, yes. And on top of that, if you really have a headquarter with a lot of sort of principal company in Switzerland, the rate could even go below the 9% because you also got a reduction on the federal tax.
Okay. And we talk a little bit about that. How is that generally determined as far as, you know, where that federal rate might land?
Well, if you really had a full benefit of the, all the privileges, or those two privileges, you might end somewhere around 6% to 8%.
Okay. And how was that? What was the process to be able to qualify for that? Because I think that was kind of one of the issues. It was typically done through rulings. But how would a taxpayer go about qualifying for one of these preferential regimes? Or more specifically, what would the process have historically been to qualify for one of these mixed company rulings?
Yes. So, I mean, you're right. I mean, most of the companies went to the tax authorities and laid out the facts and circumstances, and that they principally meet all the conditions to benefit from those regimes, and then everything was put into a ruling, which was then countersigned by the tax authorities.
And I think the benefit for taxpayers in that was the certainty. It involved transparency. This was a regime that Switzerland was obviously comfortable with, and you can understand from a policy perspective as far as trying to encourage inbound investment and those, you know, high-paying jobs into the jurisdiction. You know, not dissimilar to what we see even in the U.S., more from a local, not necessarily from a federal perspective, but, you know, the classic kind of incentive-based system to be able to attract inbound investment. And I think fundamentally just things have changed really over the last, you know, 5 years, we'll say, maybe a little bit longer, but where those types of rulings and regimes are now obviously not looked at favorably from an OECD perspective.
Yes, exactly. So, it's not only Switzerland that had to give up on, let's say, these regimes. There are also other countries which also had to give up on certain of their regimes which they had in place. But now it's also important to know that as from 1/1/2020, those regimes will be gone. Now, if you imagine that you are benefiting of a rate of, let's say, 7%, and you need to give that up, and you are then subject to the ordinary rate, which can be, depending where you are, you know, 12 to 14% or even higher in certain cantons, this is obviously a fiscal shock for that entity. And so Switzerland also introduced or has transitional measures and rules to, let's say, soften the transition from this privileged taxation to the ordinary taxation.
Yeah, because I think the challenge for many, particularly U.S.-based multinationals that have operations, significant operations in Switzerland that maybe took advantage, whether it's mixed company or another one of those regimes, is that, you know, certainly depending on the industry and depending on the company's profile, but one of the things we've talked a lot about on Cross-Border Tax Talks is our new GILTI regime, the Global Intangible Low-Taxed Income. And there are a lot of taxpayers who are paying greater than 13.125% on a blended basis. Yes. And so we talk about, you know, the Swiss tax rate being as low as 5%, 7%, whatever that number might be. Well, as far as the way the U.S. GILTI computation works, as far as making sure that if it is a minimum tax, and I'm hesitant to even call it that, but that's not done on a country-by-country basis or a legal entity-by-legal entity basis. It's done on an aggregate. Mm-hmm. And so I think many companies that had taken advantage, for example, of the mixed company ruling, when you would kind of pool everything together, and I probably shouldn't use the word pooling because of our foreign tax credit regime has really changed that, but when you aggregate all of the taxes and the underlying taxable income for purpose of determining the rate that a company is paying on their GILTI income, it is, even with a low rate of tax in Switzerland, all the tax that they're paying in other jurisdictions oftentimes equates to well above the 13.125. What that means for U.S. companies then is that those excess credits in the GILTI basket, those do not carry forward. So the additional rate of tax that a company in that particular fact pattern where they're paying already a blended rate of 13.125, any of that additional tax that they would pay in Switzerland is just an additional cost from an effective tax rate and cash tax perspective. Now, I think it, you know, puts Switzerland in par with other jurisdictions and staying away from the ruling regime. But how long do companies have as far as how does that transition work? Because I think particularly, again, for U.S. multinationals that are investing into Switzerland, that additional tax will not be creditable just because as a result of the foreign tax credit limitation and, you know, what the rate of tax is from a GILTI perspective. Mm-hmm.
So the transition rules foresee a period of, let's say, 5 and maybe 10 years. with, there's two measures. One is called a step-up measure, and one is called a separate rate option. And as I said, this just helps the transitioning going from this privileged taxation to an ordinary taxation, that you not get an immediate strong hit from a Swiss tax mm-hmm. perspective. So you can say that maybe for a period of 5 years, you should be rather comfortable than uncomfortable on that point.
So what are some of the other big changes that have occurred? I think, you know, as far as, you know, other type of, I don't know if incentive is probably not the appropriate term in the light of today's environment, but, you know, patent boxes, I think that's appropriate. We've seen, particularly in the EU, yes. There's obviously been a lot of scrutiny on some of the various members of the EU. And I'll remind listeners that Switzerland is not a member of the EU, despite being, I think, bordered by all EU member states.
A lot of them.
A lot of them, I guess. Yeah, there are a couple. Thank you. I'm still working on my Central European geography. That you're not a member of the EU, but generally right. You have been able to participate in the parent subsidiary directive for distributions, interest and royalties, but not under the scrutiny of state aid, but still under the scrutiny of the OECD and blacklisting. Mm-hmm. And this new regime is an attempt to try to get on par, not just with the OECD, but it also feels like with the EU. So talk about some of the other aspects of reform that help effectively drive that rate down.
Correct. So just before I come to that, I mean, it's really key to know that, as you said, Switzerland is not part of the EU. And also, if I look, you know, at ATAD as a big topic within the EU, I mean, Switzerland does not need to adapt those rules.
And that is the anti-tax avoidance directive that all EU member states are going to be required to fully adopt before January 1st, 2020. So Switzerland does not have to.
Exactly. So we're not introducing any CFC rules or crazy anti-hybrid rules or new interest limitation rules, which are based on EBIT or EBITDA. So one of the new measures is, as you mentioned, is the IP box regime. So and this was constructed in a way that it follows fully the latest international standards about IP box regimes. So has the nexus approach, substances is relevant, etc. So companies either already in Switzerland can benefit of this IP box regime, or obviously if you would bring in business to Switzerland with the necessary substance, you can also benefit from that. Now, what the effect of an IP box on your rate is a bit difficult really to say. I cannot spit out a number in that sense. But if the headline tax rate in your canton is 12%, yes, you will be lower than 12%.
And what are some of the drivers as far as determining kind of how that rate gets below? And again, the cantonal rate that you're talking about is the combined federal and cantonal rate, so at the 12%.
Correct. So the IP box regime is only a cantonal measure. So it does not touch, let's say, the federal rate.
Okay.
And I mean, as I said, it's the latest and greatest from the international, standards which are implemented in Switzerland.
So what are some of the other kind of key aspects and changes that, as you're talking to Swiss taxpayers, and particularly U.S. multinationals, and not just U.S. multinationals, foreign multinationals in Switzerland, what are some of the key things and key items that companies should be considering?
Well, one is certainly to review their, let's say, tax profile in the sense. So especially if they benefit from a tax regime today, what happens tomorrow in the sense of where is my ETR going forward? Like in the U.S. tax reform, you need to do some modeling of the transitional measures that are available, or if you benefit from an IP box regime. So to do calculations and to see where you land overall post-implementation of tax reform. Also, what is important is whatever your situation is that you also start to discuss that with the tax authorities in Switzerland and to see, okay, what is the best solution or the best way forward for that specific company. What I would also say is which is not our topic, taxes, but it's accounting, mm-hmm. and but it has a relevance twofold. One is, you know, when exactly is a law enacted? And when do you need to consider it for IFRS or US GAAP purposes? Mm-hmm. The second item is on the transitional rules, especially the step-up option that exists, that could have an impact on your tax accounting. So all the accounting measures or accounting points, they also need to be considered quite soon, or I recommend to do that.
Were there any changes that took place with respect to deductibility of payments, for example, coming out of Switzerland? So, for example, I know there is interest, you know, you can take obviously interest expense deductions in Switzerland. I also understand, though, that, you know, because of your participation exemption, to the extent that Switzerland has foreign subsidiaries, that generally your interest expense would be limited by income that you have related that would otherwise not be subject to tax in mm-hmm. Switzerland. Is that changing at all?
No, that's remaining the same as is.
Okay, and then what about withholding taxes? Can you remind our listeners from a Swiss perspective what the withholding taxes, dividends, and then interest royalties as we think about payments that may be coming out of Switzerland for purpose of determining that underlying Swiss tax liability?
Sure. So on interest and royalties, the statutory rate is 0%. On dividend distributions, there it will depend out of which pocket, let's say, the dividend is distributed. So there's a qualifying share premium which can be created in a Swiss company, and that amount can be repaid free of withholding tax from a unilateral point of view. So you don't need to worry about any application of a treaty with your parent.
Concept being that that's really a reduction on the equity side of the balance sheet, not really a distribution of retained earnings, and so that can come back without the withholding tax.
Exactly. It's principally what you put in, you can get it out free of withholding tax, which was not always the case in Switzerland.
Okay.
So if you have then retained earnings, those retained earnings, if you want to distribute them, you have a 35% statutory withholding tax on those payments, which then can be reduced based on the treaty. And we have quite a broad and large treaty network, which also foresees a zero rate, especially with European companies.
Right, and it's 5%, assuming a taxpayer qualifies from the U.S. into Switzerland. But Switzerland does participate in the EU parent subsidiary directive, and therefore distributions between Switzerland and an EU member state generally 0% withholding
Correct.
Tax. Obviously, the thing that all of us are spending a lot of time thinking about, the multilateral instrument, which is a little outside the scope of what we're talking about today,
yeah,
but
sure.
qualifying for, if it is a treaty or the anti-avoidance rules as part of the EU parent subsidiary, taxpayers need to be mindful of actually qualifying for that lower dividend withholding tax rate. But obviously, structuring the equity side of the balance sheet appropriately as capital is coming into Switzerland is really important to manage that dividend withholding tax.
Correct. And just on the MLI, I mean, the Swiss tax authorities on treaty cases has in the past already developed a practice, and the MLI will not change the practice that is applied today by the tax authorities. Because they say, well, already in the past, we always wanted to identify who is the real beneficial owner of the dividend income and has a quantitative criteria to be met.
Okay. And then one of the questions I get a lot from clients and even our team here is that, you know, if and when will the U.S. and Switzerland get to a potential 0% rate? I do like to remind people that even the protocol that has been around for how long at this point? 8 years,
ten
years, where we haven't, the U.S. has not been able to get a treaty through. There's been a lot of conjecture and speculation that logjam may free up. But even if the protocol between the U.S. and Switzerland does get ratified, it does not move to a 0%. It still keeps the 5% dividend. And there would need to be either a subsequent, you know, protocol or change to the treaty to be able to get to that 0%. Obviously, there seems to be a trend with the U.S. as we're renegotiating treaties with our treaty partners to get to a 0% withholding on both outbound from the U.S. as well as outbound from our treaty partner. So we'll see if we end up at a 0% at some point between the U.S. and Switzerland.
Yes.
On dividends. So you had mentioned modeling, which has been a key component of U.S. reform. Any other aspects of Swiss reform for companies to be mindful of?
One other aspect is that if a company or a group is currently not in Switzerland, to see whether now with the Swiss tax reform and the new measures that exist, whether that is, compared to other jurisdiction, the best place to be and to set up new operations. Because now, as I said at the beginning, you have a stable, predictable tax environment in Switzerland.
Yeah, and it's a great point, Pascal, that a number of companies are reconsidering, what their footprint should look like in Europe and globally. Some of that is dictated by some of the major changes that we're seeing in the global tax environment. So we already mentioned the anti-tax avoidance directive, obviously the U.S. system. But generally speaking, obviously, companies don't want the tax tail to wag the dog. I like to use that mm-hmm. expression. And that, in other words, the businesses are going to run how a business is going to run. And then, we've had Tad Fowler from P&G was on the podcast a couple of episodes ago. You know, where business wants to do and wants to feel unencumbered, but obviously wants to be able to do it as efficiently as possible. Mm-hmm. But I think your point is a good one, is that as companies think about centralizing business operations, maybe they've done a deal, maybe there is a major change that's taking place within the business, maybe they've just gotten to a maturity level from a global footprint perspective that it makes sense to be able to centralize business operations in a particular location. Well, I've been to Switzerland. It's a lovely place. Executives mm-hmm. like to live there. And I think that one of the challenges is that we've had with Switzerland, and this is not unique to Switzerland, but is the instability and potential uncertainty of the tax regime mm-hmm. as far as, well, if you would qualify, for example, for a mixed company ruling, is that something that's sustainable? Is that mm-hmm. because of the nature of the ruling and the pressure from the OECD? And I think the pitch is from a Swiss perspective, is that we now have the reform. We know what this is going to look like. And it does give that stability from a tax perspective that companies can know, okay, this is the rate, albeit it might be higher than what it was historically. Yes. I think one of the challenges that we have in from a U.S. perspective is political instability. Just, every 4 years we've got a new, obviously, president or an election for a president. Talk a little bit about, from a Swiss perspective, as far as political stability. Like, I mean, the Swiss tax system has been relatively stable up until we have reform. Do you see, that as being able to sustain itself? And given the, wave of populism that we've seen, for example, across Europe, is that something mm-hmm. that Swiss could be susceptible to?
Yes, just to understand, the last bigger tax reform in Switzerland was roughly 20 years ago. I mean, it's not like in the U.S. where it was 30 years ago, but the laws in Switzerland do not change that fast, unlike in other jurisdictions. And as we just passed now this new bill, and just to say how much time did it take until we got that bill, it was roughly, also 10 years since we're discussing about tax reform and the abolishment of those regimes. So Switzerland has not a reputation of changing laws, every year, where you need to announce what is now your finance bill and how you're going to finance stuff. It will remain stable. I don't think that's going to go away very soon.
So I think the message then for companies, in particular U.S. multinationals, is first you need to do the modeling, understand what those implications are. You make a great point from an accounting perspective, particularly for public companies, to make sure that they understand, well, now that reform has passed, when from an accounting perspective you start to record those liabilities and account for that change, that regime mm-hmm. or that change in the system. And then for U.S. companies that have a blended rate in GILTI, for example, below the 13.125, then presumably those that any additional Swiss tax that is being paid, the U.S. company can at least use 80% of those credits, the way our limitation works, to be able to reduce their GILTI income. Mm-hmm. And so even though they're paying some more Swiss tax, you know, 80% of that can generally be creditable in the U.S., obviously subject to our foreign tax credit limitations.
But just on that point, I mean, if you're talking about the 13.125%, which is the rate now, I mean, Switzerland, if you bring in new business to Switzerland, you can be at 12%. So I guess that helps.
Right.
Overall.
And,
so.
Yeah, absolutely. So and well, I'm more thinking of a company that is already currently in Switzerland. But okay. If you have a fresh start and you're thinking about what is that appropriate amount of tax, or the ideal, I should say, amount of tax that you want to pay, then that 12%, particularly as we think about interest expense apportionment, because you may not be able to get all the credits up to the 13.125, that 12% is very enticing, I think, for taxpayers. You know, and it puts you on par with Ireland as well from a effectively statutory type perspective. Mm-hmm. But where I was going was the U.S. multinationals, if their rate is above 13.125 on a blended basis outside mm-hmm. the U.S., that, as I mentioned earlier, those additional taxes that a company would pay in Switzerland are not creditable. And so that's why you need to think about the accounting implications, the cash mm-hmm. implications, and fundamentally what that does from an effective tax rate perspective.
Correct. Yeah.
And I think, you know, from talking to a number of our clients, that there has just been so much change, and the communication that VPs of tax and tax directors have to make to their C-suite, this is just put something else on the list, right? Mm-hmm. There's U.S. tax reform, there's the anti-tax avoidance directive, and now, oh, by the way, we have Swiss tax reform. So in addition to having to deal with the hybrid rules in the EU and the new CFC rules in the EU and the new interest deduction limitation rules, companies need to be very mindful of what's taking place in Switzerland, because to the extent that those taxes go up and we can't credit those, that's an absolute cost for those foreign investors into Switzerland.
That's why in that point, I would really, you know, as I said, the modeling is a key point and the application of those transition rules. So it might not be, you know, that crazy overall once you did the modeling. But I mean, that's a company by company, you need to check on that.
And the larger participation exemption that Switzerland has, the fact that there were no CFC regime, none of that has changed as a result of
Correct.
The tax reform.
Yes.
So still a great, you know, competitive tax system. I think
Definitely.
Particularly the participation exemption and the lack of CFC rules makes it enticing also as a holding company jurisdiction. And you know, certainly put you on par with some other European. I can't say EU members, mm-hmm. but other European countries.
Yes.
So maybe before we wrap, any last minute words, Pascal, for clients and taxpayers.
Well, it's easy. I mean, as I said at the beginning, Switzerland is now stable and reliable and predictable. And I think in this crazy world, from a tax perspective, I mean, now we have the OECD meeting, which is going to change everything, which we thought exists today. Switzerland now today offers that stability and reliability.
We'll let you have that last word. And the OECD work plan will certainly be a future topic here on Cross-Border Tax Talks. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Cross-Border Tax Talks. Thank you, Pascal Bueller from PwC Switzerland, for joining me on today's episode. I'm Doug McConey, PwC's international tax services leader in the U.S. Stay tuned in 2 weeks for another exciting edition of Cross-Border Tax Talks.